Accession number 10182, Rule 3.
John Hatfield, Reel 3. What happened when you finished your education? I believe that would be in July 1938 at the Xavier School.
That's right. Well, I had taken the school certificate, senior school certificate as it was then, with exemption from matriculation, which I got the exemption on the results. That meant that I couldn't stay on at the school any longer because it wasn't big enough to take you to the next stage, which was higher school certificate or intermediate BA or BSc. Higher was something higher than A-levels, but it was a necessary step to get into university or to do a degree. So what I did was to move to the Brighton Technical College, where I started a degree course in arts, the first year of which was this intermediate BA. And in that same period, I applied for the Open Scholarship of London University in Spanish, because that was the one that I thought I could do, and the only one where it seemed there were vacancies, in order to finance my later studies. I won the scholarship and therefore decided I wanted to take a degree in Spanish and subjects that went with it. But by the time I'd taken the inter exam, the war had broken out, London University, who had accepted me, were evacuated, and they gave me the choice of either being evacuated with King's College to Wales, I think, or Bristol, or continuing as an external student, although officially an internal student, and doing my studies somewhere else. So I decided to stay on at the Brighton Technical College, but switch from Spanish to French, because they couldn't teach Spanish. So there I was, officially an internal student reading Spanish of King's College, but in fact an external student reading French, under the same terms.
Now, during this time, your father came back.
My father came back in that time, yes, and he settled down to working in the head office of the bank in London, commuting from Brighton.
Now, I believe that he didn't get treated quite as well as he might have been.
No, he didn't. He felt very bitter because, owing to the takeover, he was only offered a lower-level job, and he was a very intelligent man and didn't like doing this at all, but felt he had to, because it was very difficult in those days to move at that sort of age. He was then in his late 50s, I suppose. So he just continued, and he commuted to London right through the war and did home guard duty twice or three times a week.
Now, the war broke out in September. What was your own personal reaction? Because, of course, you had very crisscrossed views on most things. How did you react to this?
Well, I was very patriotic at first, of course, and very anti-German, although I had taken part in discussions in the Tech, where I ran the debating society, about what were the rights and wrongs of British policy towards Germany. And it wasn't completely clear-cut to me whether the British government was sincere or not in its various activities, because I always had a European outlook. At the beginning, as I said, I was very patriotic, and I thought here was my chance to join the Navy and so on. But also, I was a bit doubtful as to whether it was right to have a war, because this fitted in with ideas about what was a just war in Catholic teaching and so on. So for a short time,
could you explain?
I was against it. Yeah.
Well, in other words, you didn't feel that this was a just war.
I was doubtful. Yes, I was doubtful.
What gave you the doubt? What was it about the British government's conduct?
Well, the fact that it had, first of all, the Versailles Treaty had been bungled. You see, had given the Germans the excuse to be nationalistic. We had then not done anything in the early stages to stop Hitler taking the Rhineland. Although I thought perhaps he had a right to, perhaps the Germans had a right to, as against Hitler. the whole policy of appeasement seemed in a way right if it had worked, but it didn't work. That it was such a confusion that I thought perhaps going to war over Poland, while it seemed noble and probably the only thing to do to stop Hitler, also seemed to me perhaps not to be worth millions of people being killed. I wasn't sure, you see. I was only 16 anyway. And so for a short time I felt doubtful, and I had a friend who was in South African in origin, who was very pro-German and so on. I didn't like that kind of pro-German idea, and I gradually realized that since we were in that situation, the only thing to do was to fight Nazism to stop it. So then I was free to be completely patriotic and join in, which I did, and I felt very strongly, as most people did, that the war was morally right and necessary.
How long did that period of inner dialogue, so to speak, take?
Oh, I should think a few weeks or something like that.
Oh, so it wasn't
a short time, yes.
You say you were thought of joining the Navy.
Well, I always had wanted to join the Navy, you see. So I thought, well, when I'm old enough, I'll join the Navy, and I thought of it as a romantic thing. And that's what I decided to do. So as soon as I passed my final BA exam, which I did, I sat for it just before my 19th birthday. I was old enough at 19 to volunteer to join the Navy, and I was accepted in August 41.
For the Navy,
yes.
What procedure did you have to go through to join the Navy?
I went to the recruiting office in Brighton, near the station, and said I wanted to join the Navy. And it was a very small office. The petty officer in charge first said, come back in a few months' time, because I had originally applied before I was old enough. I explained I was taking my exam and all this. So he said, come back when you finished. So in August I went back. I took various very simple medical tests. I failed on the urine test because I'd had some kidney trouble when I was young, but at that time I was all right. I was told to drink a lot of water and come back again, which I did, and I passed the test, and I was passed A1, which I was always very proud of, and told I would be informed when to report. And as far as I remember, I was asked to report again in August on a certain day. A group of about four others came at the same time, and we were sent to Portsmouth with railway warrants.
What did your parents feel about you joining up?
Well, I thought that my mother would be very upset, but she was very sensible and wasn't, outwardly. She obviously had, like most mothers, the feeling that her son was going off into the unknown and might get killed, etc. But of course, if I hadn't joined the Navy then, I would have been called up a bit later anyway, probably. So that what I did was try to get in first, and so I think she accepted it.
What about your father? I believe he'd served in
the
Well,
he was. He thought it was the right thing to do. He was very patriotic. Yes.
What about your contemporaries?
My friends in well, most of them didn't particularly have this burning desire to join the Navy, so they just decided to wait and see what happened, and they got called up.
So it was only really you wanted to be in the Navy. If you were called up, you wouldn't get that choice.
No, I'd have got into the Army, probably, yes. I wouldn't have had that choice. And also, I might have had to wait around for a long time, not knowing what was going to happen.
So in August 41... You were asked to go back to the Brighton recruiting office.
That's
what
right.
happened then with your four?
Well, we went by train to Portsmouth, and I don't remember the detail, but somehow we ended up in Fareham in the big training camp. And I can't remember the name of it, very strangely. HMS something, I'll remember later. Where the new recruits who were allocated to the Portsmouth division were trained. It was the first training place for seamen.
Well, I'd like to look at two sides of that, the sort of conditions of service mm-hmm. there and what training you actually did.
Yeah.
The conditions of service, what was your accommodation?
We were all accommodated in huts, not Nissen huts as far as I remember. I think they were huts with proper roofs, which had about 24 people in each, in tiers of double bunks, metal bunks, double. Top and bottom. And each hut had a number, I think I was Hut 22E, as far as I remember, and was in charge of a petty officer. And he looked after our general welfare and organised our training course, told us what to do, and so on.
What about food?
Typical forces food, I suppose.
How would you describe what would you
describe
that?
It was being? I suppose it was plentiful but badly cooked and badly chosen. But that was because I'd been brought up on Spanish type food, which was less soggy and greasy than English food generally.
Was the problem the method of cooking and presentation, or were the ingredients also
No, I think it was the presentation, the cooking and presentation, and the choice. For example, a typical meal might be typical main meal might be meat stew, which arrived in enormous metal dishes which were greasy and where the grease had never been completely taken off it, with lots of potatoes and bread and white bread in thick chunks and butter or margarine, I can't remember, and then some kind of very heavy pudding like suet pudding or spotted dick or bread and butter pudding, which most people liked, and of course I liked when then because I used to get very hungry, but it wasn't exactly very tasty food, but on the whole not bad. We were well fed. We had we used to get up in the morning at 6:30, I think it was Reveille, get dressed quickly, rush off and take a cup of cocoa out of an enormous metal drum without milk or sugar, as far as I remember. I liked that, but everybody said, don't want to drink that, chum, it's got barbiturates in it to make you stop you being sexy. And that was the great, you know, it's a great rumour everywhere, and I thought this was ridiculous. The Navy wouldn't do a thing like that, so I used to drink it, and that was nice. Then you did things like cleaning up the hut and rushing around, then you came back, got dressed properly and went to breakfast, and at some point early in the morning you had PE every morning.
I'll talk about the actual training
later. So that was you got up, you had the cocoa, then after another period of doing something you had breakfast, and that was good because it was a cooked breakfast. Then you did a lot of hard rushing around and got very hungry and had a big lunch, and then I think you had tea as well.
That
was the stew type thing. I believe we had tea as well. Certainly on board ship you had four meals a day, and that consisted of bread and butter and a cup of tea, and then supper was a lighter meal than the main meal, which I think was mainly not cooked. I think it was mainly things like more baked beans or ham and stuff like that, but we were well fed in terms of nourishment.
How did you react to the Navy's discipline and lifestyle, the lack of privacy, things like that? How did you react to
well,
that?
On the discipline, I was an absolute creep because I loved it. I thought it was marvellous, all this esprit de corps and doing things jointly. I had this great idealism about it, you see, and all the other people with me hated me because they thought I was an idiot. But also, because I'll go into that later, they came from a completely different kind of person and we didn't understand each other. But the lack of privacy, I didn't mind that. I didn't like it much, but I expected it. So I thought it was part of the life, and therefore it was a challenge. I didn't mind it in that sense. What I minded was the sort of starkness. There was no kind of place where you could really be comfortable, and no place where you could have the sort of softer pleasures of life, in a way, by which I mean, say, music and things of that sort. But I rather like the Spartan conditions. They seem to me exciting after being rather self-indulgent sort of student and with very little structure, because I should have said, when I was studying at the Tech, I had to study mostly in the evenings because the classes were all disrupted and they didn't have my type of classes in the daytime, which meant that I had a very unstructured life. I used to read by myself in the daytime, wander along there in the evening. So I liked the structure of the Navy.
Now, you mentioned you didn't get on too well with your fellow
Fellow recruits. Yeah, this is.
Can you talk about that a bit?
I hope none of them's listening to it now. Well, they were a very nice bunch of chaps, really. All except three of us were from Dagenham, for some reason. They all came from that area. and they were real Londoners. I thought of them as Cockneys, you know. Well, they did. They spoke with a very strong Cockney accent. And in a way, I thought this was terrific. I liked them. You know, there was sort of great contact with people I hadn't met much before, and they seemed to me to have a real local way of thinking. But they thought of me with great suspicion because I had a la-di-da accent and I had a very different background. And I think they thought I was trying to be too keen and this kind of thing. So we had quite a few confrontations. But in the end, we got on all right.
But what sort of confrontation?
Well, I don't know how it all happened, but I remember once one of the lads cornering me and accusing me of being using a lot of bad language, of being a sort of creep, in effect. But we didn't actually have a fight. And I couldn't understand this. I thought they were being unnecessarily intrusive. And because I also was terribly moral and religious, etc., in a way, I mean, not outwardly very religious, but very moral, a lot of their conversation I thought was unnecessarily crude, and they thought I was being pious, you know. They used to ask me questions about my private life, and when I admitted I'd never done anything sexual, they thought I was an idiot and this kind of thing, you see. So we didn't understand each other, but I liked them, basically, and in the end,
did
we got on all right.
Did they bully you at all?
No, they didn't bully me.
Sort of practical, you know, the level of practical jokes.
No, not to me, but they did that to one chap who came from Kent, who they regarded as a sort of dirty and somehow sinister. I'm not quite sure why they didn't like him. And I remember they took him and forced him to have a shower and that sort of scrubbed him, which I didn't think was good. I didn't like that. But there wasn't much of that. No, on the whole, they were all very well behaved and nice people.
Did you have any special friends that you made, or did you stay as pretty much a loner?
There was one other boy, lad, who came from Brighton with me, who I sort of palled up with because he was a bit more... we had some things in common, you know, and we had a few friends in common, we discovered, and he was from the grammar school. You know, we talked each other's language a bit more, so for a while we were quite friendly.
How did you get on with the next level of command, the petty officer?
Well, he was a very nice... Some of them were not very nice, but he was very nice. He came to see us the first day we were there, and he said... I'm old enough to be your father. If you play the game by me, I'll play the game by you. And if you don't play the game by me, I won't play the game by you. So that made everything very clear. And we got on very well. They were really a nice lot.
You say some of the petty officers weren't like that.
Well,
were they some of your instructors?
There were
I don't
none...
want to talk about the training,
yes.
But were some of the instructors a little harsh?
Some were a bit harsh, but there were none of them like the stereotype of the sergeant major that you get in stories and films. There was nobody who was brutal or sadistic or anything like that. No, on the whole, they were very good.
What about officers? Did you?
We didn't have much to do with the officers. I was interviewed by one young officer to see if I would qualify as a CW candidate. In other words, somebody marked out as a potential cadet who had to have special training. And I didn't think much of him. He was quite nice, but he didn't seem to be very dynamic or anything. He had been to Spain because he was an RN officer, and he said he remembered one or two places that I mentioned to him, which sort of comforted me in a way. It meant that I wasn't a complete freak, you know, that somebody knew about places that were my background.
What did he ask you about besides that?
He asked me about my education, what I wanted to do, mainly about my education. And I was made a CW candidate.
What does CW stand for?
Commission and Warrant. That meant people who were picked out because of their background and education as potential officer material.
You were aware that they were picking out because there was no chance of someone from a working class background. Was it class orientated?
I think it was, yes. In fact, I should have said, when I first applied to join the Navy, I made inquiries, what do I have to do to become an officer? Because I thought that being an officer was more demanding and more interesting and so on than being a seaman. Although I always, having read a lot of books about the Navy, I thought being a seaman had its own special sort of pleasures. So I hoped I would be an officer. It seemed to me that's what I ought to be. You know. Yes, I'm sure that they would not have picked out many working class people who had not had a secondary education. I think that was essential. But what they did have was people called upper yardsmen, which is an old term from sailing ships. The upper yardsman was the best one who got to the top yard. And these people wore white bands the same as a cadet. And we had one or two of them in the training camp who were instructors. One of them instructed us in how to row a boat on dry land. And he was actually an extremely impressive chap. I still remember him. One of the keenest and most dynamic and efficient people I've ever met. A very, very nice man, too, I think. As far as we could tell, he was very friendly and pleasant, but firm. You felt that he was really in command. And he was a promoted seaman from the lower deck. And there were a few like that.
What recreations, turn inside, did you have in the camp?
In the camp, well, we had a lot of PT, as I said, and I can't remember. We must have played football. I don't remember doing so, although I was keen on football. We had a canteen and a place where you could sit and read.
Was it a wet or dry canteen? Did it serve beer?
Oh, no. I don't think so. No, no.
Dry?
Dry, I'm pretty sure. Tea and things like that. It was a naffy, yes. I don't think it served beer. No, we used to go out for beer to the pubs around. Because we were allowed, after the first week or two, we were allowed out, and then we could go out on day passes. And sometimes I used to go out in the country and have a picnic or something. I got to know one of the other men there, who was destined for submarines, and his sister used to come to see him. And it shows how idiotic I was, I thought that he wasn't very nice to her, and that whenever she came to see him, he refused to see her, and would tell me to go and see her instead. In fact, I realised much later that she came to see me. See, it just shows how stupid I was. Anyway, we used to go out and have picnics and things. She used to bring a cake. She was in the Wrens, somewhere else. But in the camp, there wasn't a lot of recreation, but you didn't have much time for it.
How did you get on with the local population when you were out and about? Were they benign?
Yes, I think they didn't take much notice of us, but they just thought that the Navy are here, and they were quite nice to us, yes.
Right, now, getting on to the training, you say you had PT. What, yes. What sort of thing would you do in that?
Very good. It was run by a group of men who, I think, had run a gymnasium in peacetime, and they'd all joined the Navy as PE instructors, always dressed in white PE gear. And I think they had an extremely good system. It started off with running, and then you had to do a lot of things to increase your agility and horse, on the vaulting horse, rings and everything, all the gear that you normally do in gymnastics. So it was actually basic gymnastics.
Were you able to take to this?
I liked it. Yeah, I loved it. I always loved it at school too. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And a lot of people didn't, of course, because a lot of people don't like running about and jumping about. But I did, and I think that's one of the things that made me suspect, because I genuinely enjoyed it.
Well, besides PE, did you do drill?
We used to do a lot of drill, yes, army-type drill, basic square bashing, yeah. And that was, again, I liked that. It sort of seemed to me an enjoyable, lively, manly thing to do, you know.
Did you go on route marches at all?
No, what we did was to go on marches to raise money for the war effort. We used to march through various places for which we would train specially for things like Tanks for Britain Day or whatever it was, Navy Day particularly. That was showing off, and we were specially trained to march in slower than normal and look smart and all this kind of thing. But they were not route marches.
What other training did you do there? You mentioned rowing training.
Yeah, the basic training was in discipline through drill, fitness through the PT and gymnastics, learning basic seaman skills such as rowing, rope work, bends and itches it was called, which I used to like too, and that stayed with me. I find the whole business of knots and so on very interesting, handling ropes. But that was very well taught, because it sounds simple, but there's in fact quite an art to making the right knot or the right bend and hitch for the right thing. A little bit about the rigging of boats and how ships work and how to handle seamen's duties, basically.
Was any of that practical?
We were taken down to Devonport Harbour on a few occasions and actually put in a real boat and rowed it around, a cutter or a whaler, and but we weren't put on board ships at that stage. No, it was largely theoretical and just generally smartening people up.
Were you given lectures?
Yes, we had lectures. I can't remember what they were about, but they must have been about what ships, how to run a ship, you know, what happens if somebody falls in the water and you launch a lifeboat. All rather basic stuff and slightly old-fashioned in a way. I don't remember if we had any gunnery lectures. I don't think we did at that stage. I think that came later.
How long did this training last for?
6 weeks.
Where did you go from there?
Well, from there, we were sent on home leave, and sometime in due course, I was appointed to Portsmouth Barracks, which was the beginning of the real Navy. And there, I stayed a few weeks waiting to be appointed to a ship. That was the procedure.
What was life like in Portsmouth Barracks? What were your duties?
That Portsmouth Barracks was much more old-fashioned. It was the real old Navy. For one thing, it had been bombed. It was in an awful state. And secondly, it was obviously very full of people, more full than ever because of the bombing. So it was organised in mess decks, exactly like the mess decks of an old-fashioned big ship. Messes of about, I've forgotten how many people, something like 20-something people or maybe less. Each mess had a scrubbed wooden table, which was where you was the centre of your life, and hammocks, which you slung across above the table and in the space around at night time. And the work during the day was mostly drill, more complicated drill by platoons, companies, battalions, all this kind of thing, rather like, army type. That was to smarten you up. And then duties consisted of taking it in turns to be mess cook, which in fact meant you had to collect the food from the galley and bring it back and wash it. And that was disgusting because there was very little hot water. And I remember washing a greasy mess tin in the yard outside under a cold tap. And that's rather disgusting. But not bad. And that's the time when the invasion was expected. And we were given a certain amount of training in repelling the invasion.